Oh, that's not a joke.
All right, thank you everyone for coming. Hi, I'm Kim McCarty. I'm here at Portland Housing Bureau and Rental Services Manager. Thanks for coming out this afternoon for the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee. We haven't convened for quite some time, so I really appreciate everyone coming here. And we will talk more about the future of FHAC after our presentation. Before that starts, I just wanted to do some introductions. So if you could just say your name and the agency that you represent and your pronouns. Thank you.
Sydney Roberts, Multnomah County, she, her, and hers.
Peggy Semlinski, also Multnomah County, she, her, hers.
Tanya Harris, Portland Housing Bureau.
I'm Bimal Razmila, Portland Housing Bureau, he, and hers.
Jared Gogenauer, now the button's on. Yes, Jared Gogenauer, Rental Housing Alliance of Oregon. He, him, his.
Deborah MZ, Executive Director for Multifamily Housing, Multifamily Northwest, and she, her, hers.
Good afternoon. I'm Alan Laza with the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, and my preferred gender pronouns are he, him, his.
I'm Rachel Macy with the City of Gresham, and my pronouns are she, her, hers.
I'm Barbara Geyer, Barbara Geyer Real Estate, she, her, hers.
And Yoon Ho at the Community
Alliance of Times, and she, her, hers. My name is Nico Sada. Use they pronouns, and I'm also with Real Choice Initiative.
My name is Jess Larson. I use she, her pronouns. And I work at Metro.
Megan Greeno, where I work for Bureau of Development Services and Code Enforcement, and I use she, her.
And Emily Lee, also with Metro, and I use she, her pronouns.
I'm Twan Duong, I'm with the Housing Bureau, and I use she, her pronouns.
I'm Joanne Gilmer, I'm in the Rental Services Office, she, her, hers.
And I think we've introduced everyone except the folks who are on the phone.
Christian Bryant, he, his, him, co-chair of the Rental Services Commission, and president of Portland Area Rental Owners Association, and also own a property management company.
Okay, thanks everyone for your introductions. I'm going to pass this on now to Bimal, who will take us through the demographic data that that his team has gathered for the analysis of impediments to fair housing. And actually, a little bit before you start, Bimal, I'll just give folks a little more background. So for those who may or may not be aware, the analysis of impediments to fair housing is a required federal report that recipients of community development block grant funds and other entitlement funding from the federal government, those jurisdictions are required to do this analysis. We did our last analysis in 2011. There's been a lot of changes in the types of rules and expectations. Now the federal government wants us to go back to the original guidance, and so we are starting that work. And it starts with understanding the demographics of our community. There's a lot more to it, and And so over the coming months, we will invite you to go deeper into this information where we disaggregate by race and ethnicity and other protected classes. And then when we are done with that analysis, we'll ask you and the community to look at our findings and recommend some types of action that the community as a whole could take with our federal funding and other funding to address these impediments.
Great. I just pressed this, right?
Can you hear me? Oh, great. My name is Bimal Ratnamari. I'm at the Portland Housing Bureau. And so I'd like to thank my team for some of the data that's being presented today. It's kind of interesting. I feel like I brought you here with a misleading title of the presentation. We're not really going to dig into any analysis of impediments at this point. But I'm trying to give you a picture of demographic snapshot of our jurisdiction, what it is like. And like Kim said, we'll be moving in the months ahead, giving you more detailed data, different broken down by race and ethnicity, also by different protected class as well. And also we're trying to come up with like a little bit of more a hybrid of AI and also the fair assessment that's sort of like been shelved right now. So we're trying to come up with combining those two. We'll be getting more into geographic analysis, diversity and segregation, more into public housing data as well. Let's see if this works. So these are the protected classes: race, color, national origin, religion, gender, family status, and disability. These are federally protected classes. Marital status, source of income, sexual orientation, including gender identity, and domestic violence victims. These are state protected classes. So we are actually trying to make sure that we protect these classes from any kind of discrimination, of a housing discrimination of any intentional or unintentional implications. So we just start this slide anytime we have fair housing meetings, just to know what we're talking about. And this is a consortium. So City of Portland, City of Gresham, and Multnomah County works together as a consortium for both the AI analysis as well as consolidated planning. And we partner with Home Forward and lots of other different nonprofit organizations to collect data. But because it's a consortium of Multnomah County, City of Portland, and Gresham, we focus our geography pretty much on Multnomah County. So we have City of Portland is responsible for Portland. City of Gresham is responsible for Gresham. And Multnomah County is responsible for all the areas within Multnomah County, minus the Portland and Gresham. Mm-hmm. So that's how the consortium works. And for demographic summit, this is, like I said, think of this as a journey to AI analysis. We are going to be focusing, at this point, it is almost like establishing a baseline. Mm-hmm. So lots of data that we have is pretty much the census data, and what's also been updated with the most recent ACS American Community Survey data. So let's start with the total population and gender. This chart shows for each jurisdiction from 1990 to 2018 onwards, the population and the distribution of gender within that population from over these years. So just like Oregon, just like Metro, all these jurisdictions have increasing in a consistent way from 1990 to 2018. So for Multnomah County, from 1990 to 2018, it increased by roughly 30%. Portland increased by roughly 36%. And Gresham increased by 40%, whereas the balance of Multnomah County increased by 50%. It has different implications, the growth. The next slides will give you a summary of what it is at this point. So Oregon grew by 5.5% from 2010 to 2018, Metro by 8.6%. So Multnomah County and all the jurisdictions within grew much more in a faster way than the state as well as the metro. The growth in balance of Multnomah County is very interesting because it has implications that is it a different level of gentrification that's happening? Is it that's what's happening because people move from Portland to Gresham and because of the newer gentrification as well as the housing unaffordability in Gresham are people moving into outside the balance of Multnomah County? So that's a question we need to dig deeper as we go into analysis. Just looking at the bigger picture, it doesn't really tell you. You have to start looking at the track level data over time, and which we intend to do as we proceed. And this is a little bit of a crazy slide. It's showing the age distribution for all four jurisdictions. So the age has been separated into three different buckets. So under 18, 18 to 64, and 65 plus. And this distribution actually shows really interesting pattern. For all the jurisdictions, the under 18 has really decreased over time. So we need to dig into why it's decreased for all of them, all the jurisdiction. And 65 plus has gone up for all the jurisdictions as well. But what's really fascinating for the city of Portland and Multnomah County to look at is last three decades, 65 plus actually had gone down, but 2018 shows sharp increase. So is there some kind of aging in place going on? That's a question for us to start looking into. Why is it so unusual for 2018 to suddenly see the spike in 65 plus? Any questions? I'm sorry.
Well, can I ask, so in the same way that you talked about gentrification and the movement within Portland and Multnomah County, is there something specific that you think in the analysis around age would be important? Because age itself is not, generally speaking, a protected class.
Right.
And so might it be correlated with disability or, so one of the, will we correlate it to one of the protected classes?
Well, we can actually, it might be related to family status.
Families, okay.
Because family is children,
yeah.
Right?
Okay.
So that could be.
It's more likely at the younger ages to have a family.
Right.
Okay.
So this is right going into family status. The over from 2000, the families with children have been decreasing in all the jurisdictions over time. By this time, I'm just showing the data for only 2018. So national average is 28% of the households are families with children. But you can see that Multnomah County and City of Portland are way below the national as well as metro average. City of Gresham as well as the balance of Multnomah County, even though they saw a little bit of decreasing trend, but they are at this point, they are still higher than the national average. So that's City of Portland, City of Gresham, and balance of Multnomah County. Let me know if I'm like speaking too fast or too low. And when it comes to race, ethnicity, so overall, from 2000 to 2018, all the non-white household in the population have increased for all the jurisdiction. And most noticeable significant increase have been in the population, Asian population and Hispanic population, Hispanic Latinx population. So for American Indian and Alaska Native, it is a little bit doubtful because it kind of looks like a stagnant population, but census doesn't do a great justice when it comes to Native American population. But this is what we have. And usually, at Portland Housing Bureau, we always work with the community, and then whatever the number the community has come up with, that's the population we work with. So, for example, the census, if you look at the city of Portland, there are only 8,000 people of Native American origin. But if you look at, talk to the community members, you'll find that there are at least 30,000 to 34,000. So it doesn't get really reflected in the census data. And also, how the data is presented, whether it's race alone or race alone in combination, that also makes a lot of difference, because a lot of Native Americans tend to be have like multiple heritages from different groups. For example, if you look at the race alone, there are only like, like I said, 7,000 to 8,000 people. But if you look at race alone or in combination, there are like 21,000. So how do you count? But right now, we're just presenting the census information as just it is. But as we go along, we'll try to incorporate more data, locally available data, data that's available from different communities as well. And we're going on to the city of Gresham and the balance of county. What you really noticed here is the increase in African-American population here for the city of Gresham. Mm-hmm. And also, like, actually, it's equally increased for Asian and Hispanic Latino group as well. But obviously, I think for African group, it's a very noticeable change. It's similar thing, not as noticeable, but would be in a balance of county.
Please, anytime, feel free to. And I think that you'll probably do this more as we get into the analysis mm-hmm. and when we are talking about the diversity, some of those dissimilarity indexes and such. But I think it would also be helpful here that because I think the important point in race and ethnicity is just like you pointed out there, is the comparative percentages of either increases or decreases mm-hmm. by geography. And so I think there's different ways to convey that. Right. And that may be happening later in the analysis. But even in just the raw data, mm-hmm. I think, again, it points out why this data is valuable to us. And I think potentially what we see in the movement of the black community might be something that we want to capture in this kind of data.
Yeah, definitely. In the next month analysis, we'll be looking at the track level changes, right. So you can really see the change that's going on. So, and this data shows the distribution of owner-occupied and renter-occupied households among different jurisdictions. For Multnomah County, City of Portland, and City of Gresham, you can see that their rental household per person is way higher, and they are trending more towards the 50-50 split between owner-occupied households and renter-occupied households. But if you compare that with the state and metro, as well as with the balance of Multnomah County, you'll see that they are still predominantly owner-occupied. So I also listed here the foreign-born and those who identified themselves as speaking second language, but noting that they have a limited English proficiency. For all the jurisdictions, the foreign-born has increased dramatically for all of them, for Multnomah County, Portland, and Gresham. And I forgot to include data for the balance of Multnomah County, so it was an oversight on my part to include in the slide. And it's pretty much similar to very Gresham to a certain extent. Let's see. For some reason, when it comes to limited English proficiency, it increased all the way to 2010, but there's a slight decrease in 2018, and I'm not exactly sure what that means. It could be just the nuances of data, or maybe people who are even foreign-born and they have come here with. This being more not just their own language, but English as well. And this slide is also, we looked at the share of people in poverty. So this would be the group of people in their income in last 12 months if it fell down below the poverty line. So Gresham is the highest. They have the highest poverty rate. And Portland, at the balance of Multnomah County, at the lowest. But poverty rate, if you look at last few years, which I haven't included in this data, has actually gone down a little bit in the last few years, but still high compared to other regions.
So
go ahead. Take it.
I'm not used to this. So is that when you say the poverty line, is that 100% of the federal poverty level?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So in the reverse, we look at the household, a median household income, and the median household income has gone up a little bit compared to last few years. So Portland stands at $65,740. That's the median household income. But even though the household income has grown a little bit over time, it has not been equally shared by different race and ethnicity groups, which is something that we'll be digging more in details later. But I thought it would be interesting to see what's the connection between the income and poverty. So we came up with a slide, what we call the nexus of income and poverty. So if you take family income and then divide it by family poverty threshold, if it is more than two times, that means people are doing okay. If you just look at the blue one, that's for the Multnomah County. So more than two, like there are 534,000 people, they're reasonably okay. But it's very surprising to see that there at least 250,000 people were less than two. So they are poor and struggling. And if you decompose that data, which is less than two, into one group, which is less than one, and the other one would be between one to two, then you can still see there's 118,644 people in Multnomah County who are doing poorly. So that's sort of like a connection between the income and poverty. And for a comparison purpose, for Portland, four member household family, the poverty threshold is 24,000. So just imagine if you have four-member household and more than 48,000, then you are considered okay. But we have to realize that actually the poverty threshold that's given to us is kind of pretty low. When you really think about it, it's like really, really low. You can't really survive on that level, so.
You said 28,000 for a family of four?
24,000.
24,000?
Yep. That's 100% poverty. Mm-hmm.
That's low.
Yeah.
You can't live on that.
And we also started looking at the disability data, and it's really hard to get like very reliable disability and the housing related data from anywhere. The census does try to have like a number and a spatial distribution of disabilities data, and they try to combine different groups like hearing difficulty, vision difficulty, cognitive difficulty, ambulatory difficulty, self-care difficulty, independent living difficulty. So the data that we have at this point is 14.7% of the people in City of Gresham have some kind of disability. So as we move along, because the census data is not the most reliable data for disability, we'll have to start working with Multnomah County disability offices and different other offices to get more detailed data if possible. Any questions up to this point? That can go really quickly, I guess. I can now explain you like maybe slowly. So that's a overhaul demographic picture of all the jurisdictions that's in the consortium. So in next month and month beyond, we'll be working with the different people, with the Home Forward and different organization, Allen's organization, to get more data. So in March, we'll be presenting the data of income, poverty, and disability by race and ethnicity, broken down by race and ethnicity, and then getting into more geographical analysis or spatial analysis as well. What the concentration of, like what Alan said, is like what the group of people are moving from one section to other section that can be seen spatially. And looking into more diversity in segregation and more details in housing market analysis, like cost burdens, which is being borne by which group, that, and also like looking into more mortgage HMDA data as to if there's any kind of a discrimination when it comes to mortgage denial. We know with Taylor's here, we're looking into more public housing and regulated housing as we go ahead. In April, I think we plan to look into more access to opportunities and if there are any other further disparities and barriers. That's our plan for next few months going ahead, presenting data, but at the same time working with the committee to refine what are the areas that we really need to dig in. So for today, I just thought it might be good just to give a big picture of what's happening in the jurisdiction. I'd be more than happy to answer any other questions. I know it's a lot of data, and I'm sure like this analysis actually will be very interesting to people who are data enthusiasts among yourselves.
Imam, can you tell us more about the previous slide? It's hard for me to see this as Gresham, right?
Right.
And is there any thoughts about why the difference? Or?
It's kind of interesting. It's like correlated with income and poverty at the same time. So I'm not exactly sure if there's a, it's also like there's also a higher senior population there too. So that might be correlated with disability to a certain extent. But that's something I think we need to dig in more as to which groups are actually suffering or having to deal with disabilities of different kinds. Yes,
question. Yeah. I saw that in the first slide you mentioned that the protected classes under the state of Oregon included sexual orientation and gender identity, but we didn't see or hear about that in any of these slides. Will that be covered in another presentation, or will we hear about that at some point?
We are in the process of collecting data, so right now it's focusing on what's available from census. But now moving over, we'll start collecting other available data that's possible. So I mean, certain data is really hard to get hold of, like religion data is kind of really hard to get hold of, right? So, but whatever we can do, and if you know of sources for getting data, please let us know.
Okay. And then just an accessibility question. Do you have any presentation slides that are larger format available?
Okay, I think we'll have to start with.
Oh, that would be great. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. I think we have to be much more aware of the needs, Yes, Peggy.
Thank you, Bimal. I just want to make a couple comments. So I do work for Multnomah County, and we recently completed an updated report, Poverty in Multnomah County, dated 2019, and we worked with Chris Smock Consulting. I don't know if you know Chris or Chris, and so she may have some data, but she also, when we try to really look at some of this track level data and really be more granular with it, census data is all there is. And so it doesn't give us the breadth and depth that we want at all, and that's really unfortunate. But I might suggest if you want to contact her, she may have some data files, and you can suggest that I told you that in case there's, in other words, no need to do it all again. There's some things that have been done. Secondly, the thing that we're talking a lot about is a self-sufficiency standard, which is another way of measuring poverty. You've probably all heard about that. And it really looks at, and it's regionalized, so it takes into account where you live and what it costs to live where you live. And here, in what they estimate for Multnomah County is that for a family of four, where the 100% of federal poverty level is around $24,000, $25,000, the self-sufficiency standard, which is closer to $89,000. So that's childcare, transportation, housing, food, education, things you need, that most of us, all people, need in some degree or another to live and live somewhat comfortably. So, and there's no data on that, like how many people don't fall into that standard. So it's I think as a community we're trying to think about other ways we can actually represent who's living here and what they're experiencing, because the federal data is just so, leaves us all wanting something else.
Well, thank you for
And I don't mean that as a criticism of your work at all. It's just another way.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning Chris's work. Uh-huh. Actually, I saw her presentation at the Home for Everyone.
Excellent.
So I think I'll be contacting her.
That's
so
right. I was able to. Okay, good.
Great. In terms of like data, sorry, just 1 minute. So as we move along, I think I was thinking that I had spoken with Kim about this. It would be really nice to like work and connect with data people in the city of Gresham and Multnomah County, and also Home Forward, work with them so that we are all at least synchronized in our data collection and we're not unnecessarily collecting data. So that would be, I would love to like work at that level also. Mm-hmm. And not everybody has to be there at this point, but just in terms of the data collection. So, yes, sorry, Alan, go ahead.
So quite a couple questions. One is about the addition of qualitative data. And so are you going to is there a plan to incorporate any qualitative data in the analysis at all? I don't know, if you know, whether it's surveys, focus groups, or other ways to get at what community members might be experiencing, what barriers might be experienced by community members. And kind of along those lines, when we get down to the access to opportunities, is that data point going to be the Opportunities and Vulnerability Index?
Right.
Okay.
Coverage and mapping.
Yeah. Or mapping, yeah. But, so as far as qualitative data, is there a plan or thoughts about trying to do that?
I think that sort of, like, depends upon what the timeline is and also how the committee wants. There have been previous work that has been done by survey by Portland State and some of the work your organizers have done. Whether to see if the certain stories have been told or not, if there are certain things that needs to be done, if the committee feels strongly that additional interview and talking to people is necessary, I think definitely we'll do it. Right, Kim?
Yes.
Yes, please.
I was wondering if you had a phone number and email address that we could get in touch with you if we had further questions.
Okay, I'll be more than happy to. Kim can give it to everyone, or should I just?
Yes, I have your sign-in sheet. I'll just email the contact info to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Is that okay?
That.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Thank you.
No questions for
Vimal? Vimal, could you say a little bit more about your next steps around analyzing affordable and public housing and how that will kind of play a role in the overall analysis?
So, I don't know if you saw this slide. So, this is the next step, is to digging more into public housing and regulated housing, and even the city's city regulated units. This will be, I don't know, the different levels of working together. I mean, we have, a consortium will have own data, and so it's probably we'll have to coordinate with Home Forward to see what data you have and what data that, what you're thinking of your organization as well as to how to go along with this AI requirement, right? So at this point, nothing really has been done on this line. That's just the outline. Yeah.
So historically, in our conversations with Home Forward for this report in the past, we've asked Home Forward, can we get information about sort of the spatial distribution of the housing? Of course, being very careful not to pinpoint a particular place so that person feels outed by the report. We also are very curious. It happened in the past. Like, what is the demographic nature of the housing? So, you know, most people, of course, are poor, but are there some differences in terms of female head of household, race, ethnicity, language, disability? Is that kind of information?
Thank you. And very recently, just to clarify, so distribution of housing, but also of people with vouchers, both? Is that helpful?
Yeah.
Okay. And then I think we recently looked at PHB's opportunity map and did a mapping based on the opportunity map, so not just sort of a geospatial mapping, but also overlaid with the areas of opportunity, so that might be a very interesting discussion to have with this group about that. Yeah.
Definitely.
I was just curious, there's been a struggle to define and find out where it is on accessible housing, and I wondered if at any point we were going to try to see what we might be able to do around that. It gets tackled a little bit and then it gets punted because it's terribly complicated because everybody has a different definition. But I'd be interested in seeing if even if it can't be finished in time for this report, if we could get that ball rolling and start tackling it.
I mean, I know that PSB is in the process of like surveying different levels of accessibility by different providers, but I don't know how far it's gone, so that might be so intra data that might be useful if it's available.
Okay. If any more questions, I'll take us to the next part of our agenda. So just a little bit more background about the timing of this project. So Bimal took us through April looking at some of the basic demographic information that's required for this report. Our intention after that is that we sit with community to say, do you agree with our analysis of what this information is saying? And so that would happen in the summer. And then we would mostly have a report completed by the end of the summer and then take that back out to community for feedback. And then lastly, this would be sent to HUD in October when it's due. The intention of that timing is also that we want this report to be done before we start what's called the consolidated planning process. And the City of Portland, or the consortium members, will be starting the new consolidated planning process. It's a five-year plan that outlines how our communities want to spend their federal entitlement grants. And so we really need the analysis of impediments done before that planning process starts, because it gives us some guidance about where we think that the priorities will lie.
So when do you begin that planning?
So that, yes, that planning it's starting now.
Okay.
But the second phase of it should start no later than October.
Okay.
And will conclude by the spring of 2021. And so that spring, we'll turn it into HUD by the end of June in 2021. And that will start the beginning, July 1 of the new 5-year consolidated plan.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And so as Bimal outlined, the consortium partners include Multnomah County, who's here at the table, City of Gresham, who's also here at the table, City of Portland, and then we've also been in a special partnership with Home Forward, because they are also required to do this type of reporting because of the type of federal money that passes through their agency. And then we're also here in partnership with Metro, because they have often been tasked with doing an analysis of what kind of affordable housing is in the Metro area. They are really well positioned to understand some of this information, and so we're really happy that we have representatives from Metro here with us today. And hopefully we can grow that partnership going forward for this report. So any questions about the timing? Okay. So I'll go into this committee itself. So this committee has been in place, the Fair Housing Advocacy Committee, since 2011. It was one of the recommendations of the original Analysis of Impediments report, that an advocacy committee be created that had a multitude of expertise, ranging from the jurisdictions that are involved, people who are renters, people who understand social services, who have experienced discrimination, who understand the home ownership market as well as the rental market. So it's a really large committee. It's currently 19 members. Many of you, thank you folks here at the table that have been serving on this committee since day one. But at this point, we need to transition it, because the City of Portland has new guidelines for committees, and to be responsive to state rules about committees, this committee needs to sunset in terms of its current membership and be reformed. And in that new formation, the city requires that members not sit on any committee for more than 8 years. So that's sort of
the basis of why we are reconvening this committee, and also it's the right time because we're starting this new analysis of impediments, and we need new community input in that report. So the bylaws that you see in front of you, if you didn't grab a draft, I'll just, they're pretty typical. They are now standard for all committees in the city of Portland. But basically what it says is that the jurisdiction partners will appoint members that represent them. And we've been in conversation with our jurisdiction partners, and the jurisdiction partners, I'll just report out, have seen this and have indicated that they would prefer to have staff represent them. So Multnomah County, the recommendation is that there will be two staff people that will be part of this committee. For Gresham, it will be two staff people. For the city of Portland, it'll probably be one staff person and then another at-large person. For Home Forward, it'll be one staff person. Metro, still talking with Metro to see what kind of participation that they want, if that's formal or not. So then the recommendation is that there would be 8 at-large seats that would strive to fill with that diversity of expertise that I described earlier. Historically, those at-large seats have been filled by agency expertise, but these bylaws are clear that it's not the agency that we're asking to be part of this, it's individuals. I'll also say that we will start the recruitment process probably next week. The announcements will go out, and so partly today is an announcement that we really hope that you will encourage you to apply. Ask others to apply. But we're seeking individuals. So historically, we've had individuals from Fair Housing Council of Oregon, from Multifamily Northwest, from the Community Alliance of Tenants, from the Coalition of Communities of Color. So we definitely want all of those agencies to send us people, and also looking for new people. Those recommendations will then be reviewed by staff, and then ultimately will be approved by the mayor and the Portland Housing Bureau director, because the bylaws for all of our committees state that they have the ultimate jurisdiction over appointing members. And then we'll ask all of the members to be sworn in at City Council, and based on the timeline of applications in February, review in March, we're hoping that we'll have a new committee seated by April. What else? Just wanted to go over the highlights. Whoever sits on this committee, we will definitely go through an onboarding process, going to more depth about the analysis of impediments, about fair housing, and also about the role of advisory committees and what you're required to do to be in compliance with city and state law. So any questions about the bylaws or the recruitment process or anything related to what I just said?
I have a question. Yeah. I'm new to this, so please forgive me. So these represent, you said, the city guidelines for all city staffed or somehow
city managed, committees.
City committees. Committees that are under the city.
Yeah.
Jurisdiction of the city of Portland.
Right.
Okay.
And this
are they new? Are some of these new? I'm just curious.
Yes.
Okay.
Or they have transitioned. Even if we have old committees, City of Portland, of course, has very old committees.
Yeah.
And they have all transitioned to this format.
Okay. So these things are standard.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with a few tweaks for each committee, but pretty standard. This committee, of course, is very unique, and so that's why we've kind of put off on adopting these bylaws, because we are a multi-jurisdictional committee, and it took a while to, have conversations with the various jurisdictions to make sure that we're all comfortable with this. And then accompanying this will be a refreshment of the intergovernmental agreement that we have between Multnomah County, Gresham, and Portland. A question
question about the term limit. So it looks like term limits are 8 years, a total of 8 consecutive years. I'm curious if that applies to both the jurisdictional partners and the at-large seats, because if the goal is for jurisdictional partners to continue participating, I'm wondering if term limits are meant to be for the at-large seats and not jurisdictional partners.
The term limits are for people and not the partners. So, yeah. And maybe that's something that I need to clarify here. I'll definitely will clarify in the IGA. But if, as an example, for myself, I'm not sure if I can be a member. I certainly have been here for more than 8 years. So I think any kind of staff person that would be in this role would probably at some point be term limited, and there would have to be a different staff person.
So everyone.
Everyone has a term limit.
So if we are, you know, we're Multnomah County, we can only be here 8 years.
Right.
Fair. I hope not to be here in 8 years. No offense to anyone here.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
And this maybe is a conversation you and I should have, because I know we're meeting later this month, but for the Fair Housing Council of Oregon, we actually have it in our contract with the city of Portland, and it actually mentions a technical advisory role, and so I think we ought to sort out whether or not that counts among the 16 seats. And I think it can just be either way. So it can either be, we're happy to apply to be one of the 16 seats, but we're also happy to not take up one of those seats if we can still participate in a different role.
Okay.
So
yeah, and I think that's been the concern for our other partners like CAT and Legal Aid Services of Oregon. This is a draft, so I very much welcome these comments, and so I can make revisions, and the intent is to finalize this in March and then seat a new committee by April.
So, Kim, I just want to make sure I understand.
Yes.
So, the committee that was in existence is being disbanded.
Yes.
And so, anybody that would want to participate starts their new 8-year clock rolling as the new committee.
Right.
Okay. All right.
Right. And so for those of us who have served already for 8 years, and thank you, Deborah, because I know you're one person that has, it's likely that we will ask members that have already served for 8 years to not reapply and to ask someone else from their agency to apply.
Do you plan to hire a facilitator? I see that you may. Page 5 of 6 says optional. I'm just curious.
No. I think that would be more on a case-by-case basis, if we were doing a retreat
or a topic or something.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Mm-hmm. Kim, do you have the information on how long people have been on here?
Yes.
Because I can't remember exactly when I joined. It's like it's been a while, but not quite 8, you know?
Okay, I will double check.
All right, thank you.
Any other questions?
I have one.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So do you need our, like, in my case, I'm with Multnomah County, do you need the chair of the county board to appoint us? Is that how, or is it just, I mean, I take it back and work it through my channels. I'm bureaucratic, as you can imagine. I don't know what the history of this has been.
It has been informal. And,
okay.
And I am of the belief that the more formal you can make it, the better. So
okay.
If you had a letter from your chair and then we swear you in formally, I think that makes it better. And it shows more investment by the jurisdictions if you go to that level.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then, so in my case, as you know, there's a role in my office that it would be that person. However, that position is vacant.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you want people, not agencies, right? So I would want that person to be in the seat, but what if they're not available?
They're not available?
For the application, right?
Right?
Like, I could be until they get here, or...
I think someone could apply and then resign.
Okay.
And then someone else, and then we could accept new applications.
Okay.
Yeah, Kim, so this is like the official last meeting of this 9 year FAC. This is it.
It's not, no.
Thank you, Stephanie. It kind of feels like it.
And I cannot thank the folks here that have been with us since the beginning enough, all the years of dedication. And so it's not till April. if you can hang in there with us for a few more meetings, we certainly appreciate it. And of course, everyone is always welcome to the table, and your input is always invaluable.
That was my question. So is this the last meeting? There may be more in the next, between now and April, possibly?
There'll be this meeting, there'll be the March meeting, and then the April meeting.
Okay.
And then hopefully we'll have new members by April.
Gotcha. So at least one more meeting, though.
Yes.
In March.
Yes.
All right. Out of curiosity, is there like a sort of capstone or anything, that, you know, a final report issue, kind of like our own FHAC Mueller report or something? kind of just to tie it all together.
We do have an obligation to report, and we did have a separate report for many years. It has shifted into what was called the CAPER, which is the report that happens every year for the consolidated plan. It's not great reading. You will not feel satisfied with it. But that's what I have to offer. And if you stick into this process, then it will be the completion of the new analysis of impediments to fair housing.
FHAC 2.0.
Yeah.
Got it.
Moving along. So we already talked about the recruitment of new members. If you haven't seen the announcement, please ask me about it, and I'll forward it to you. Wanted to touch upon some of the information that I sent to the committee about new federal legislation. It's it's going to take me a minute to pull it up on my computer, just so I have notes. So I'll review with everyone what that was about, and then just curious if there's any commentary or direction that you would like to give me in terms of speaking with our federal government relations staff, and then just to let you know, it is on their radar. So what I'm looking for is the email that I sent to everyone that talked about some changes in how the analysis of impediments is done, and also changes in how the federal government is characterizing communities in terms of whether or not disparate impact has taken place, and how you would define that and how you would measure that. And it's, in my opinion, it's a big departure from how it has been seen historically. And so there's an opportunity for the community to comment about that between now and March 16th, and you can go on the HUD portal and make your comments, and I think it's very valuable to do so. The city of Portland is formulating their own comments. And Alan, do you want to add anything to that?
You sent this info, Kim?
Yeah, okay. I'm looking for it.
Yeah, thanks, Kim. I think I would echo exactly what you said. You know, the change is a proposed change to the Affirmatively Furthering Fair Housing Regulation. And I think there are some important pieces that are shifting in what's being proposed. I think, as Kim said, you know, one of them is this actually the analysis of the impact of racial segregation in communities. And I think that one of the things that we ought to make clear in this committee and in this process we're in now is that, to me, the analysis of impediments is a floor. It's a requirement by the federal government to analyze some data and provide information. But it doesn't prohibit us from saying that these are the barriers to true housing choice in our community. And I think it would be difficult to argue that in this community the impact of racial segregation of some communities is a real concern in what you showed in that data, and I think it's something that we, in the analysis, we're going to want to see if, how that plays out. So the upside is that it's just proposed regulations right now, so we are not, as a jurisdiction, are not subject to those yet, but it gives you a sense for where things are headed. You know, I would highly encourage, and I think as an advisory body of the city, you know, I would like to see us encourage the Bureau to submit comments. The other jurisdictions at the table, I would also suggest submit comments, and again, if you read the proposed regulations, there are some significant changes to the language, and I would offer that jurisdiction should look at it and figure out whether or not it fits the values that you think your community represents. And again, as advisory to the City of Portland, I would offer that I don't think the changes reflect the values that we have as a committee and as a community around what we're trying to address in this process. And specifically around racial segregation, that's the biggest piece to me that's been removed. You know, there are some pieces in there around housing supply and other pieces that I think are potentially positive, but they don't. There isn't a requirement to evaluate that housing supply, for instance, by the geospatial analysis that Bimal is going to do. Right. So we would not be able to necessarily be required to look at, you know, one of the bullet points you have there around areas of opportunity and the opportunity and vulnerability mapping, right? That may not be a factor under the proposed regulations. So those are the kinds of things that are being proposed in the new regulations that, again, I think do not reflect the values that we have and the kind of work that we're trying to do together. So that's what I'd offer, both from our organization and as a member of this committee.
Yeah. I think in that level, I think the fair housing assessment tools have been removed, but we're not really going to miss that because that's going to be like the old data anyway. It's 2010 data, it's not new data. But like Alan said, it's a very fundamental definition of what is affirmatively in furthering action. It's been defined differently, and like we said, whether it's reflective of our values or not. In addition to that one, there's another one that's being proposed is barriers to affordable housing.
Yes.
So that's a separate one that's going on too, so people can react to that proposed rule as well.
Yeah, I think it's part of the same proposed rule. Oh, there's a set of pieces that are shifting in the proposed rule, and some of that is around that. Again, I don't think it's in and of itself something that isn't important, but the context for it is important. Right. You know, so right. Again, what do we consider those barriers? And if I think one of the values I hold is analyzing opportunities and vulnerability in that context. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't think that's part of that conversation under the proposal.
And then, I just wanted to add, Home Forward is planning on submitting public comment in response to the proposed rule, especially in opposition to any of the provisions that gut the original intent of the Fair Housing, Affirmative Fair Housing rule. And if you have any summaries or feedback that we could pull from, that would be great.
That'd be really helpful.
Yes.
I can ask for
them. I'm happy to send those out as they're coming out of the resources that we have. So I just started receiving information from our folks, and so I'll shoot it out. They do have some templates and letters, and there's actually a website that you can specifically submit through. Yeah, so the one I have right now says draft, do not circulate, which I think they're serious about.
Yeah, fair enough.
So thank you, Alan. I think that summarizes it very well. In the email that I sent with the FHAC agenda, it has a link to the federal site and a brief summary of the changes. And then there's also an article that talks about a new investigation that journalists did in New Jersey that I thought was really interesting. There's a related film. And it's what it's called is the key proposed changes to the affirmatively furthering fair housing rule. So there's time for public comment, and then we can adjourn.
Public testimony?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Does everyone know who I am?
Does anyone know who I am?
No, please introduce yourself.
Because I go up to the Fair Housing Office for 421 Yamhill. I got a bully complaint in on TPI. Nobody knows who I am. Okay, so I was at the Metro Community Dialogue for Permanent Supportive Housing meeting. But what it really was let's make sure that all the providers can have this meeting on the government dime, and all the pigs can belly up to the bar and salivate over this $300 million that's going to come in that's not going to be for permanent supportive housing. As we know, shelters are... shelters are very, very bad places where there's lots of human rights abuses. There's no regulation. I think it would truly, truly shock you if you were in a courtroom and you were to hear all the stuff that happens like at SAFES. So there's a lot of consumers that get kicked out for non-public safety reasons out of unregulated shelters. The $300 million, or $247 to $300 million, there's not going to be any permanent supportive housing. And so for them to put that on their calendar and say there's going to be a community dialogue when it was anything but, I happened to be there, and when COIN was there, and they had set up early and they got their cameras rolling because people were talking, Metro ordered them to leave, and they had to go sit out in the parking lot. And the microphone never got passed to a citizen to talk. Only the providers were allowed to talk, and only the wallpaper edited, you know, film shorts of homeless people talking could be put up, and nobody could speak. The facilitator from Recycling Waste Management came and told me that he had been instructed to not talk about anything having to do with government accountability in terms of how it goes back and forth between elected representatives, bureaucracy, agencies, and back and forth, and providers. Like, how do they monitor their contracts? How do they keep people accountable? There was to be absolute, instructed by Metro management, that they were specifically not going to talk about their accountability issues. It just seems like I was being dictated to as a private citizen about what I could or could not say at a public meeting, and the microphone was withheld from me, and they instructed COIN to pack up their cameras and their microphones, and they went out and they sat out in the parking lot. And, you know, to wait for Metro to come out and then do their messaging, right? So this $300 million, it's not going for permanent supportive housing. All the traditional providers bellied up to the bar, and we're all salivating about how they were going to divide it up and where it was going to go administratively. No talk about really serving the people who need services. It was disgusting. They should be ashamed of themselves. Fair Housing Council should be ashamed of themselves for not getting in there and getting in the faces of the shelters that are unregulated and using what power they have. And you know, I try and get people in the homeless community to come talk to you guys, or come talk to Metro, or come talk to Portland City, or Multnomah County, or Clackamas, or, you know, Beaverton, Washington County, and they are so defeated and just feel like that you guys are just like gonna hold their head down under the water and just let them drown. Okay? That and that you're so corrupt. Okay? That you're so corrupt and they have no power representation. I suggested that perhaps the Department of Justice needs to have a consumer-only meeting once a month with various homeless consumers to really get a good idea of what goes on, because there's so much oppression and suppression out there and so much wallpaper from the government, you know, and very detailed on their messaging, and they know that the public is very unhappy with the homeless situation, what they see out there, and they're trying, you guys are just trying to capitalize on that resentment and just, you know, and here comes some money from the state. So, it's all about the government will dictate to you. You know, there's no discussion. The Metro had on their calendar, it said, community dialogue, permanent supportive housing. There was no community dialogue. It wasn't about supportive housing. It was about how they could all get their fingers into that pie. And, you know, I mean, God knows what would be left for anybody, which is very little. Let me tell you, it's shit on a shingle, okay? If you saw what was going on in SAFEs year after year after year, and, you know, the city and the county just kept handing them their funding. Why? Cronyism and nepotism. That's why. I mean, you know, it's time to shake it up, okay? It's an election year, you know. I'm going to be on camera Thursday, and I'm going to be saying what happened in that meeting. This, you know, this is, I come here, I come to the Human Rights Commission meeting, I come to the Portland Housing Advisory Commission meeting. This is the boondoggle table, okay?
Thank you.
All right.
Can you give me your name, please?
Maggie, Portland Homeless Town Hall. I go to city and county council every week. I try and do, you know, 3 minutes at city council. Unfortunately, Tim cuts off the camera when I talk about homeless people dying when they get kicked out of shelters, or homeless people dying when they're kicked out of the hospital. You know, so I fought back on the fact that he cut the cameras and kicked everyone out, kicked me out. When that happened, 2 weeks later, Mark Joling comes to the table with, you know, Kaiser Permanente to say, oh, we've got funding for 140 medically fragile seniors. Why? Because they didn't want the public to know about people who die a few days after being kicked out of the hospital. People who die a few days after being kicked out of the shelters. You know, in 2016, there was a government-sponsored study that said that the shelters were totally inappropriate places for people with mental illness, people with physical disability, and aging people, regardless of whether they were, you know, citizens or immigrants, race, gender, LGBTQ, didn't matter. It was the mental illness and aging and disability. When you have six to an SUV parking spot, everybody, MRSA, 10 women had MRSA on their feet from August to February in SAFEs. Bed bugs, lice, TB, scabies, pneumonia, they're hacking all day long, you know? And it's just, it's time to abolish the shelters and only do permanent supportive housing, because the shelters are unregulated. I brought a woman who was making a complaint against TPI down to county board meeting, and when she came back to Willamette Center that night, she got kicked out. So there is definitely retaliation. This is what they fear. They fear if they go down and they talk about the fact that they're being kicked out for not reasons, for unfair reasons, that they will be retaliated against, and they will. You just cannot, you know, file a complaint with these contractors. These consumers have to be able to come to you and talk to you, and they have to have confidence that you're going to hold the contractor's feet to the fire.
Thank you.
That's all I have to say.
All right.
Oh, no, she, yeah. Thank you, everyone, for coming. If you have any questions, I'm going to be here. There's more food. Please take it with you. And we will reconvene the second Tuesday in March.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks. And if you need your parking ticket validated, let me know.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Is that Christian? Is there anyone else on the phone besides Christian?
What?
No. Okay.
Remember.
Ah, you have one. Right on. Knew there had to be one. I'll get this thing for you.
Yeah, so we have that demographic data about the people that we are serving, both with affordable housing and without service, in terms of whether we're